Following podcast contains profanity and is unsuitable for a child-friendly or work environment.
Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to Almost a Podcast, episode 166 with Paul and Chris and Barry.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, listeners.
You're right.
Paul appears to have some kind of electrical storm causing a lighting outage. So you can see his handsome face from the, what's that, your left profile, but everything on the right. Look, that man in the mask.
All right, fair enough. I mean, there is a light out here, but that's not going to change. Plus, I'm hungover anyway, so it's probably not best you don't see me.
Hungover from what, sir? From what?
I revalidated my advanced life support yesterday, which is not easy, and I did it. So, yay me.
There you go. So you went out by trying to kill yourself. That's it. I'm going to pass it, and then I'm going to try and kill myself as a celebration.
Well, yeah, so then I have the skills to resuscitate myself if I needed to. Like, that's why you do the course, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's very good.
Perfect. As we all get older at an event, if I have a heart attack, I want you to be standing beside me when I have it, Paul.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That'll be fantastic.
I can go, you're fucked.
You need to carry, like, a portable
defibrillator. Needs to make the call.
An AED, yeah, I suppose. I know how to use one of them, you know.
Well, you don't come back without one, do you? You're just treading water without one.
Yeah. That's not actually a bad idea, is it?
Here we go.
So, like, part of that is to give that as some part of the spiel. But, like, if any of you drop dead, don't worry. I have a defibrillator here and I'm trained to use it.
Just take a car battery and a couple of clamps.
Anyway, shut up. Let's get on with this because we're on the time.
Yeah. You're on the time. That's true. Chris is jet setting. So he's in some kind of BA lounge there.
Yes, I've just come back from quite good fun, actually. First trip outside of Europe for about 3 years. Conference. Saw some old friends. Quite hungover at a couple of points last week. But
Fun. Not that the British are obsessed with alcohol or anything, but...
It improves so many aspects of your life.
Why not?
Why not? Right, so we're here to discuss the important stuff, the real stuff.
Yes.
That's why Paul's painting still. Can't even fucking spare 40 minutes. 40 minutes in your busy schedule.
Yep.
It's how he gets through stuff. I can't do this multitasking. I admire this ability to paint and record and commentate and stuff. Because my brain only does one thing at once.
I'm pretty sure his does. It's just not this. Anyway, so Chris has done some of the legwork.
Chris, what you sent us, is that the final version, what you sent us? Or is there a...
Pretty much. There's a couple of typos that Jim's Eagle Eye and Alice's Eagle Eyes have spotted, but pretty much that's what's there. One of the things on the thing that I sent you, Alice has clarified overnight, which is in the thing that we'll screen share.
Yep.
So the idea is to talk today. The main theme, I guess, is the Rules Committee updates for 2022. We've completed all the voting on all the different proposals. And what we'll just do is run through the changes that we've made. I think for people who are new to this kind of process, the reason that we have some sort of level of, I guess, protection over what's an official part of the rules is that Warmaster is well known for having a very good, tight rule set. Balanced army lists, you can turn up, play a game against somebody you don't know, and you know you're going to have a good time. The lists are all well balanced. And the idea there is that we want to make sure that we don't end up unbalancing or overcomplicating a lot of stuff within the game. For people, again, listening, if you want to try and try out some new rules or try out some new things, the War Master Experimental Forum, if you don't have a link for that, it's through the Facebook group. And I guess, Barry, you'll put this recording up on YouTube, won't you?
Yeah, it'll go relatively quickly.
So if you could put, Barry will put the link for the Experimental Forum in the thing on YouTube. So if you want to go along, the idea is that a lot of this is community-led, but what we really want is evidence from playtesting that something is going to work. And for things to become an official part of the rule set, that playtesting is done over an extended period of time across lots of different player communities, ideally as many different groups of people playing the game as possible. So against that background, Barry, should I screen share?
And I think we can, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's the one. So hopefully, so this document will come out through the usual channels, which would be the War Master Revolution site, and we'll probably put it in the Facebook group. Yeah. This will come out within the next few days. There's a little bit of background on the different sort of statuses that things have. But I think probably what we just want to do is run through army by army and just talk a little bit about the discussions behind and the rationale of what's been changed.
So Prince, are you able to take off the, what's it called, where you've got edit mode, where it's got the, that one, yeah?
Oh yeah, see what we want. Oh, I know you want to view it.
Yeah, so it doesn't have all the page breaks and stuff in it, whatever they are.
Good. See how I do that.
I think it's that little backwards P shape in the middle. Under Acrobat.
There.
Is that one?
No, that's to hide all the paragraph marks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's what you want.
Okay. That's good.
Bigger, better.
Yeah. If you could get rid of the paragraph marks, it'd be cool, but don't worry if you can't. Yeah, no, perfect. Yeah, there we go.
Yep,
perfect.
You want that? Okay. Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Right. Okay. So, for those of you who are watching in black and white, i.e. listening to the podcast offline, the document that we're about to read, as I said, it'll be distributed through the usual channels. Shall we take it in turns to read things out?
Yeah. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Paul, do you want to go first?
Albion? Yes, I can do that. Right. Mists of Albion. So army changes going in word order. So Albion, Mists of Albion has had a rewording. The spell may be cast upon a single friendly infantry unit within range, regardless of whether the caster can see them or not. The spell lasts until the start of the caster's next turn or until the unit moves in any way. Then your target infantry unit counts as defended, even if it is in open terrain. Rationale, reword the spell to clarify the intent of its mechanics and pave the way for its reuse in other lists. There you go.
Yeah, reuse another list. Spoiler alert when we get to the end.
Spoiler, yeah.
I think that's something that going forward we're going to need to do more of. That if you look at the game as like building blocks, then rather than changing like, I don't know, a spell, you change the spell that and all the lists that use that spell change.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make any sense to change it for one army and leave it different for other armies. Because the game is built on like Lego blocks. So if we change our Lego block, we change the Lego block rather than the army list itself.
Yep.
That's a good analogy, actually. Mm-hmm. So if you play Albion, the spell is exactly the same as it was before. We've just reworded it to make it clearer. And actually, as a spell, that's quite a decent buff if you count as defended.
Yeah, and it allows it to be used in a different list as well.
Yeah. But also, I mean, it's a good spell. You can use it on its single infantry unit. It doesn't specify they have to be unengaged, so you can cast it into a combat, and it's a good buff on your own troops. So, yeah, good spell.
Good stuff.
Right, next. You proposed next. Quite a few of the Beastmen things. So, yeah, if you want to...
Oh, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. But I might have done it because the other person ran out of space on the proposals.
okay.
He was going a bit gung-ho on them. But they needed doing. So Doombles didn't really have a role at all. They were as much a negative as a positive when you added them to a unit. They didn't cause terror. And I don't think the Beastmen list had any way of getting terror at all in... I can't even think of a spell that gave them terror. So I think it was Nathan. He was the one heading up the Beastman proposals. Came up with an idea of making effectively, it's like a Carnosaur type character, like a Saurus Carnosaur rolled into one. Where it's got less attacks than a Saurus Carnosaur, but it brings its own terror. And it can join a limited amount of things. So it can only join Beast Herd, Herdkin or Bestigors, And I will be. Why is it? Why is it limited to those three? Does anybody know? Is that to prevent?
I don't think it's limited to those three.
It's just
if the character joins those unit, they become subject to the same kind of bloodlust that Minotaur units have.
But other so things wouldn't.
I don't believe so.
Okay, that's interesting that only those are affected by it, but I guess there's some fluff reason behind that, that, like, for example, the next one, Centigors.
But I think the idea is that it's only the infantry that get that. So Bloodlust is, if from what I remember, it's a buff on your attacks, but also there are some compulsory moves you have to pursue in advance.
That's
so
right.
It's kind of a bit of a yin and yang thing.
Yeah.
I think the logic of it only being on the infantry is that if you had chariots or cavalry, well, the army didn't have any cavalry until we made the change to the Centaurs, which we'll hear about in a moment, but you wouldn't want to have that in your chariots. I think it would break a couple of mechanics.
There's an interesting discussion around when characters are part of units, etc. Because it says here that they become subject to bloodlust in the same way as the Manitor units until the end of the following command phase, which means the unit would still be suffering from bloodlust, but the character potentially isn't in that unit anymore, because that's how characters work. Because at the beginning of the command phase, they're no longer part of the unit. But that didn't really work as a debuff, because then they were never part of the unit in the bit where the bloodlust worked. So they had to find a way to kind of give them the bloodlust without the character being potentially still in that unit.
Yeah, so the unit gets an order. It moves away, leaving the character behind, as they usually do. And at that point, it's unless the Doombuild character follows it, during the character movement, the bloodlust would end at that point.
I think they suffer from, because bloodlust makes them move on initiative, but the character isn't part of the unit during the initiative move, which is why that had to be kind of fudged in there, I think, is the answer. But anyway, I'm sure this is, with all these things, they've got a year of playtesting, so if it doesn't work as intended, this is when we'll find out it doesn't work as intended.
Exactly. Okay. Shall I do the next one?
Next one, go ahead. Centigors.
So, Centigors, change of stat line, points, and basing. So, Centigors are now type cavalry. They've got three attacks with one shooting attack, that's range 15, three hits, six up armor, three size as normal, 60 points, minimum nothing, maximum two. So, Centigors carry an assortment of range arms, mainly shoot 15. However, they can shoot from any edge and turning to face target. Just measure the range from any stand, edge, front, side, or rear. Also, enables them to shoot enemies charging them from any direction, which is a standard rule. In the game, note that Centigors are now cavalry, so are based facing the short edge of the base, like all other kinds of cavalry. Because why were they different? Who knows? Didn't need to happen.
They weren't cavalry, were they?
They weren't cavalry, were they?
They were infantry.
Yeah, it's in like, what were they? Then, so that's just, this is cleaning up this to like, why do they have to be this weird thing that doesn't work?
A couple of things to say about this. Firstly, that it does involve rebasing, which was a really big discussion because we normally don't do this.
Yeah, okay.
But there wasn't a solution that made it work.
But we do rebasing if we have a unit that nobody ever takes because they're awful.
Exactly. Like, I think anyone who had a collection of beastmen might have a unit of Centigors, like, because they just wanted to have one of everything, but they're not using them. It's not. I mean, it's better to do this than like you could. Yeah, because they needed to change. They were just not thing before.
The other thing to say is that the light cavalry optional rules are changing.
Yes. So
they don't get that can run away from everything all the time.
The second half of like the light cavalry, so they're gonna get rid of the second half part of it, where if you've got range 15 you can't be chased unless by something of equal status,
but only by light cavalry, which hardly anybody has access to.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that's gone. Alice has decided that that's fine. I mean,
I never liked it. It was silly. It made too much. It changed too much for too
change,
little
change, change
too little playtesting.
The important thing is you do have light cavalry can evade in any direction, and that is what that suits light cavalry perfectly.
Perfect, good. So they get a slight buff, but it's not a game changing. No, I'm going to take 24 units of these guys now.
Yeah, chase me. You can. Right.
mean, previously they were infantry, so they were on the long edge of the base, and there just was no reason to take them. They had absolutely no place in the army. Of the few Beastmen armies that I've ever played against, I don't think I've ever seen a unit on the tabletop. No. So hopefully this will get them out of people's model boxes and onto the tabletop.
And basically, the way I see it when being part of the rules committee, if there are units in an army list that never get used for any reason because they are terrible, that's the kind of thing we should be fixing, isn't it?
I think Jim used them, but I think that was because he liked the fluff of them being drunk. Weren't they drunkards?
Yeah, they were drunk.
Stumbling around in the woods.
Ungainly drunkards, yes.
Yep.
Pissed up drunkards.
Yep.
Like you two. I'm sober. Well, I was drunk on Sunday, to be fair, but not since then. Right, Minotaurs. So what happened to Minotaurs? They get bloodlust. That's always the same, isn't it? They had the bloodlust.
Did we change?
Is it a points issue with these?
Hang on, I'll grab. Yeah, I think it is a points
issue. An adjustment to the stat line, I believe, and also I think there's a points reduction as well.
I think maybe did they change armor Paul's, class? Did they change while armor?
Paul's looking from that up.
Six to nothing because six armor meant nothing anyway.
Just look it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry.
So while Paul's looking that up, I'll read it out for the people who are listening along.
Oh, yeah.
So Minotaurs are infantry, 5 attacks, 4 hits, no armor save, unit size of 3, 80 points, and minimum 0, maximum 2. Special rule, a Minotaur unit is subject to bloodlust and will always use its initiative to charge an enemy if possible and cannot be given orders instead. They will never use their initiative to evade. A unit with bloodlust cannot be driven back by shooting and never rules for drivebacks. A unit with bloodlust must pursue or advance if victorious in combat where they are permitted to do so. A unit with bloodlust is unaffected by an enemy that causes terror in combat. They don't suffer the -1 attack modifier.
I'm pretty sure they had their own specific profile.
Yeah, it's a points change.
And I think now they've been brought into line with Fanatics. I think.
Yeah. So the old profile for Minotaurs was 110 points.
Right. Which was nuts.
Yeah.
What was the stat line there, Paul?
5-4-6. Yeah. So they had some armor, which they don't have now.
But they do have 4 hits. Is that normal for Fanatics?
No.
Maybe they're off troll slayers without. They look like troll slayers.
This is a troll slayer profile. Yeah. So we changed Minotaurs from what they were to a troll slayer profile.
Okay. Which is good because we've taken something that was unique and put it into something that's already existing, which is what you want. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, something that wasn't working and is unique because they're the two worst of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like before, that was like for a unit that must charge, like, you know, it's too much points for what it was going to do. Like, you could bait them out, and yes, they'd do a lot of damage, but they wouldn't do any more damage than something that was much cheaper. Like,
the six of armor is not saving you.
It's not saving you. It's not going to keep you alive. You know, no. And this kind of unit is about a fire and forget style of play in terms of like goes in, it does its damage, it will not come back. Hopefully, it does more than it costs. So, people might argue that. Perhaps, giving what Minotaurs are, is that underpowering them a bit? Anyway, it's what we've done. Stick it for a year.
Yeah. What I'll actually do, I think, for the document, if I put the Minotaurs first so that the Bloodlust rules are there and it's easier for people reading through it because the Doom Bill is after.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay, cool.
Good.
Okay. Another change for the Beastman list.
Oh, this was mine. So good.
So, Barry, do you want to read this out and talk about
it? So, Hunting for Gore... how much do I need to read out? For let's assume there's some knowledge of the game. So you need 5 plus to cast. Basically, what it did, it was the same as any of the movement spells like vampires have and lizardmen have and empire have. Empire have it, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they have voice command.
Yeah, so there you go. But it was only allowed on certain units within the list, which didn't make any sense because Empire can cast it on knights, Lisbon can cast it on cold ones, but for some reason these guys couldn't cast it on chariots. And so anyway, it didn't make any sense for there to be restrictions and keeping everything the same as far as possible. This should be the same as most of the other, what's it called? Voice of command type spells.
Yeah, so all the movement type spells, basically it's now standardized. So This spell, Hunting for Gore, can now be cast on a 5-up on any unengaged friendly unit, rather than the restrictions that were there on the spell before. So a little bit more flexibility for the Beastman player on what he can do, which is actually probably a good thing, because the Beastman's army's signature ambush move is actually quite hard to pull off effectively. Yeah. And this may be a useful way of getting a few more things into combat if you manage to get the ambush to actually work in an effective way. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a good change.
So this kind of spell, if you have a Ring of Magic and they don't have a Dispel Scroll, it's like an auto win. So that's something to bear in mind. And also, one other point is the only one that doesn't fit this profile now is the Lizardman. But I think they can afford to lose a Skink Priest.
Yep.
When they cast it. So I'm not too worried about Lizardman.
So we roll on. Cafe has no changes for 2022, and the list remains as developmental status.
I think they do have changes, but they're not.
They're not
tinkering around the edges, yeah. I think.
Chaos, no changes for 2022. But they've, are we saying at the end, like they had the change like that was made in 2021 confirmed? Is that, yeah?
Those are confirmed. And those are on the document.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the Jim's suggestion with the confirmatory votes is that we basically compile a list year on year on year of all the things that have been changed, so that people know it's all in one place and we can remember what we've changed. That I think that's a good suggestion.
Yeah,
like a change log. It's a good idea. Change log. Yeah.
Change log. Yeah, that's it.
Change log. Okay, so here's some good ones. Chaos Dwarves. Simple points changes. Ball centers, points change to 140 points. Stat line remains unchanged. And I'll just tell you what they're both reductions. So they originally were. One sec, ball center.
150.
Yep. And hobgoblins have gone to 45 points. Stat name range unchanged. They were 50 points. So it's a drop of 10 and 5, respectively. That's to bring them more into line with what we think they should be. Blunderblusses. Now, change to effects and flexibility with min-max choices. So units with blunderblusses have a shooting range of 15 centimeters. The unit has two shooting attacks per stand. Enemy roll both attacks per stand as part of a stand and shoot reaction. Units hit by a blunderbuss get the -1 to their armor roll, because armor piercing. And one unit of Chaos Dwarves per 1,000 points can be replaced by blunderblusses, including the 20-point discount, so still counting for Chaos Dwarf min-max value. Note this also counts for min-max value of blunderblusses. Blunderbusses are minimum nothing, maximum 2. So that has changed because it gets you to upgrade or whatever you view it is, like you mess around with your core troops a bit.
Also gives them a job because they weren't very good at anything, but now they are quite good defensively.
Yeah.
And they can, if you move within 15, we've shoot people 6 times, and then when you get charged.
Old rules, but it was only one shooting attack for standing and shooting. The chance are with blunderbusses, because they're short range, they're going to get charged. So this has made them at least fire at full effect.
Well, it effectively gives them 5 attacks per stand when charged.
Yeah, when charged, yeah. Yeah, they're not packing. I mean, they've got 4 hits because they're dwarves. They've only got 6 up armor. So it's not like we've given 5 attacks to a 4+ armor unit. You know, they're not like a mixed, you know, they are separate from Chaos Dwarf Infantry, but it's given them a better role in the army. And also, it's, if you wanted to, you can, it gives you more tactical flexibility with list building for Chaos Dwarves, which is, and this thing of upgrading a unit of your core, like to be that missile troops or downgrading, depending on how you look at it, has been going around now in a few other lists as well. That's good. It's good stuff.
I think this makes good sense. I don't know, Barry, you had some strong opinions on this, because it's sort of one thing that we rolled over into the ogres as well, we'll come to the lead belchers. They didn't really have a role either.
No.
The blunderbusses were not that effective. And by the time you'd got the core Chaos Dwarves that you had to take for the list, you didn't really have a lot of points left over to take the blunderbusses. So all in all, it's again one of those units that sort of sat in the box and didn't really have a good place. So it's to try and encourage people to actually take them and do a few different things with them. So I think it's a good change,
because you can't have too many of them. It's maximum in a 2,000 point game. You're going to have 4 units. It's not like you can fill the field with blunderbusses now, because you can't.
Anyway, so one of the things, sorry, Chris, sorry,
No, they only have 15 range, so that you have to get really, really close to use them, which is another reason for not taking them. But if you get when you get charged with them, it's almost you're going to sit there and want the enemy to charge them, because two shots on the stand and shoot, that's going to hurt.
Yeah,
well, especially really with armor piercing, both on the shots out and the defensive shots. I think they're going to be quite good.
Yeah, it's a fair chance against the charging. A charging unit might even lose a stand to the stand fire, you know, and that will dramatically change the maths. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. We haven't made the changes with ogres around allowing them to take lead belchers instead of bulls.
No, that's true.
But, yeah. I mean, if this one proves, maybe that's something we can look at them.
Yeah, like it. Anyway,
they suffer the same issues with having really expensive core troops.
Yeah.
As dwarves. Yep.
So rolling on the Great Taurus, it's the same rules, but we've reduced its points to 80 from 90. So any character can mount a Great Taurus. They fly and they cause terror.
They've basically just been made to match the Griffin rather than have
remove redundant shooting attack and reduce overall points in an expensive army profile now matches Griffin mount. Yeah, so we've deleted cleaned something up on them. Yeah, because before they would have two shooting attacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, this is just to give the feeling was the shooting attack really wasn't all that effective. You were paying some more points for it, and it's just to give the Chaos Dwarf player a little bit more room for maneuver in building a list to get around that problem of very expensive core troops.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that's a good. I don't think we're going to see more Great Tauruses being taken, because they were a popular character mount anyway. But it just makes it a little bit easier, you know, because it's 30 points less now.
So
10 points less. Right. Mm. So you've room for another sword or something. But in those expensive core troop lists, you're always thinking, God, I wish I had another 5 or 10 points here and there. Mm-hmm. So
I think it kind of stands when you take all the changes together, you might find you have another 5% to spend over the whole list with the other changes we've made. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Barry, you better speak about the demons.
Well, I think we got, of all the changes, this is probably the second most, what's the word? Like the second most, the one I predict would have the second biggest impact is this one. Because historically, demons had a table very, very similar to this. But for whatever reason, lost in the mists of time, now it was considered too strong. So the demon instability chart, if you rolled a 6, if you roll down a little bit, because this is the important bit, we'll talk about the top bit in a minute. If you rolled a 6, you used to get back a stand similar to the spell. And for whatever reason, that was considered too strong, and it became some kind of weird hodgepodge, half bonus, half negative. So if you rolled a 6, you ended up having to charge shit, even though you were potentially only one stand.
So yep.
You lose confusion and randomly charge the nearest thing. Well, that's great. So that was the 6, which is the kind of the best result. So that's now changed to gain a stand, which is a massive buff.
Mm.
Consider you're rolling this table for every single demon that suffered a stand of damage.
Yep.
And in the old chart, there was no buff. You either ended up running into stuff that you didn't want to run into, or you lost another stand, or you became confused, or whatever.
Yep. Exactly.
So this buff, I think, could turn demons into something that's kind of bottom quarter, into something that's definitely at least mid-table.
Oh, okay.
I think. Especially
big
when
words,
take,
big words.
Big words. Especially when taken with the other part of this spell. Other part of this change, which means that if your demon unit is within 20 centimeters of a wizard, including the general, if you upgrade it, you've got potentially 3 wizards. You used to be able to have 5, but now you've got 3. So that's 3 20 centimeter bubbles. They don't deduct 1 from the table roll for having only 1 stand left.
Yes. Yeah.
Because normally, if you lose 1 stand, you don't deduct anything. If you lose a second stand, you take 1 off the roll, which is basically a death sentence for the unit. So that, together with this, makes the demons a lot more resilient.
That little buff there of being close to a wizard and you can regain a stand if you roll well kind of fits it, isn't it? Because you can imagine that it's a minor summoning from the wizard, isn't it? Like he's summoned more demons back. You know, it's like it's a spell without actually casting a spell. Yeah, it's good.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the wizard doesn't affect the table in that way. He's not the guy bringing it back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the plus, you don't get a plus one. You just don't get the minus one.
Yeah, exactly. So stopping them disappearing.
Stopping them disappearing. So I think the first half with the demon wizard was poached from Chris's Nippon suggestion of last year.
Yep.
And the bottom half was something Alice came up with. But all in all, I think this, I don't think there are any other changes to Demons. I think it's just this, but I think this could make a massive difference to how well they play over the course of a game, because you tend to, when you play with Demons, it's really frustrating. You get to like turn 3-4 and you're dinged up and stuff just starts disappearing.
It starts exploding.
Yeah, you're like, shit, I've got no army left, I'm killing myself.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, go on down.
Anybody got any?
This is actually quite a nice way of tidying things up for the demons, because Barry, you've often said that the summon extra stat, summon demons is a regrow a stand spell. It is difficult to actually get it cast, and you don't often get it to actually work over the course of a game. So I think this is pretty good.
Chris. It's not that it's difficult to cast on the four up. It's the problem is the timing of when you get to cast it.
Yes.
So
yes.
If I commit my stuff to combat, they've got to live my turn, they've got to live your turn, and then they've got to get into my spell phase.
Yep.
So it's better to be charged in a lot of respects.
But because of the timing of when this will arise, it's at the beginning of the command phase before you've done anything. It's right at the beginning of the command phase. So it gives you a bit more of an idea as to where your units are at for the turn. So it's like a free spell almost, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and if the gods are with you, you could end up getting a stand back in the initiative phase when this kind of happens, and then getting another stand back in the spell phase and have a full unit again from one stand.
Yeah,
meaty.
The gods are always with me. Right, next thing. Okay, this I see. This is a big thing.
This is the big thing.
Dogs of War. Right, pikemen now have a 5+ save with no change in points. They have increased for no points. So they were 6+, now they're 5+.
I've just built a list with 24 units of pikemen. I'm not going to paint it, but I will play it.
Yeah, right. Okay, so
24 units of pikemen on 5+ save.
Yeah,
it's mad. Well, it's mad.
Somebody's going to get around your flanks. It doesn't matter how long your life is.
So the issue with pikemen was that it was felt by some that they did not stand up to cavalry well enough. You know, and this will hopefully make them last more than 2 rounds of combat. So it allows, the point of them is to counter cavalry. So cavalry charge them, they stick them there for 2 rounds of combat, allowing you to counter charge. That we shall try this year. Pikemen are 5+ armor.
Pikemen are the bee's knees this year.
The bee's knees.
Offensively, these guys are going to be powerhouses. I see Sherwin turning up in September with a list. I guarantee at least 24 pikemen. At least
24 pikemen. Well, we shall see what happens.
Right.
collecting your tears in jars as it goes along.
Right. If somebody wants to try that list out at a tournament, I have a whole bunch of pikemen I can lend you. I don't have 24, but
nobody has 24 yet.
Chris, are you at the Triwiz in a few days?
No, I'm not.
Right.
It got booked up within like 3 milliseconds.
It did.
Although a place came up this weekend, but I've already booked to go to an epic tournament instead. Yeah.
So dwarves here, like I'll lead on this one because there was something that didn't happen in dwarves I really liked. You know, so just explain. So the
ambush. But we can't. Don't bring shit in that wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Just sticking with this. Okay.
So, because I really liked the thing.
Yeah. We'll talk about that on a different episode.
Okay, so dwarves.
You can talk about it with all your proposals.
Shut up. Right. So, dwarves, anvil. Okay, so change of effects in points. It had been reduced to 30 points before. Now it's gone back to 50, but the difference is that it lasts for both. It lasts until the dwarf player's next turn. So, the dwarf activates it, gets the 4+ in his turn. So they're making, so the dwarves are then immune to terror for that. It used to be just the dwarf turn, but it needs to be there for the opponent's turn. It now is, and that has rebalanced it back to 50 points. Simple as.
It was a very elegant solution, but I think it was Ollie that came up with this. Very good.
It was because other solutions going around, weren't as simple as just simply extending it.
The problem always was that unless you're doing combat your turn, it actually the pain comes on the other person's turn.
Pain, because then also it's allowed, like your opponent can, like if they win a round of combat, they can draw back, you know, like so now and then it affects you when terror is going to be there. You know, it's like this is a much better solution to have it into you know, the dwarves next turn, so they've got defensively it in on.
And they are a defensive army, aren't they?
They are. Well, they can't be anything else. Right, so goblins, scroll on down, please.
The goblins.
Pump wagons, rewording of special rules. Right, there's quite a bit to read here. Right, we'll just have to read it. So a pump wagon cannot be driven back by shooting and does not roll for drive backs. Pump wagons ignore confusion. A pump wagon cannot be brigaded by other units, not even other pump wagons, and characters cannot join it. The enemy does not gain victory points for a destroyed pump wagon, and a pump wagon does not count towards the goblin's break value in any way. The pump value doesn't move in the command phase by initiative or by successful orders. Instead of this, it can always move up to d6 times 10. The move is automatic, requiring no command roll. This happens at any time during the command phase, but it may not interrupt a character given orders or a unit moving, including other pump wagons. This gives the pump wagon movement of between 10 and 60 each turn. Pump wagons move like normal units and does not have to move the full distance if the player wishes. In the combat round, it charges, pursuits, and advances. Pump wagon receives d6 attacks. It's in addition to any additional attacks it receives for charging and pursuits. When charged or retreating as a result of combat, its attacks are halved by 2d3. Roll for attacks every round of combat. Clarify wording for the intention. This is how the unit is to be played. There's one question I have. If you put a spell on a pump wagon that stopped it from moving, I assume it stops it from moving. Yeah, as in, if you're like, there's, or reducing its speed in some way, it's affected by those things. So there's just a bit of maths you would then have to do, which you don't normally have to do, like in the game. That's it. Yeah. Don't think there's anything more to say on that. Do you guys have anything?
Not really. No? It's just the way the previous version of the rules was written, it was confusing and yep. open to a bit of misinterpretation. So hopefully this will end that.
Yeah.
For all those maybe it'll help people get goblins out of their system. We've had so many goblin armies over the last year or so. Maybe people use lockdown to paint up all the little buggers.
good luck to them.
Yeah, like right.
Good luck.
Here okay. we go, the other big one. Oh my God almighty. It's just one thing worse than the pump wagon, it's the fucking war right. wagon. Oh.
So war wagon changed to movement while lagered like I was last night. Okay, so there's a lot of text. I will just read the paragraph of the change. So the war wagon consists of a wagon stand and a horse team. This must always be either in column or with a team in front of the wagon, or a lager with the horse team displaced beside the wagon edge to edge. The wagon cannot charge and moves at 20 centimeters full pace. The unit moving up to 5 centimeters after a successful order can end its move in a lagered formation. A unit moving more than 5 centimeters must end its move in a column formation. That sentence there is what's changed. Okay, so war wagons are complicated, but it's clearing something up.
So this actually makes them a little bit less complicated to actually use, as long as you only move 5 centimeters. I think the original proposal was 10 centimeters, and some people thought that was a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, you can't
10 centimeters isn't a great deal. I mean, bloody cannons move 10 centimeters.
Yeah, exactly.
But you got to bear in mind that. Have you ever tried to take down a war wagon in lager formation?
Very difficult.
When it's lagered up, it's almost impossible. You've got to go in. Somebody did the maths a long time ago, and you've got to go in with something around, 50, 60 attacks to actually be guaranteed of taking it out. And it's very hard to concentrate that amount of force. Yep. The thing is defended on all sides.
Yeah.
And therefore, and it's kind of like, a crab that comes in and out of its shell. When the crab's in its shell and lagered up, it's hard to take down, but when it wants to move, it has to come out, and that when you want to move them, that's when they were vulnerable. If you messed up an order, that was the time that you could go in, and because when they're limbered, in other words in column formation, they're actually quite easy to take down. So this I'll be interested to see how this plays out. It's worked out quite well. Alice has played it quite a lot in his community, but I'd like to see what happens in the hands of an experienced Kislev player. So Jim comes to mind. I'm sure
Jim would be a good one to try with this one.
Yeah. Kislev stuff out. And I think for certainly the 5 centimeters rather than 10, being able to move the centerpiece of the very hard to take down centerpiece of your army by 10 centimeters. We felt that was a little bit too much. So we'll try it out on 5 and then see what happens. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting.
Is it slow though? I mean, it's going to take a long time to get anywhere.
Well, it should.
And they've only got 40 centimeter range, haven't they?
Yeah. I think
it's 40. Certainly anyway, no more than that.
Let's continue.
Oh no, it says the range of 30. So yeah, it's only like a crossbow range, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the smaller arms.
Yeah, but so you don't go anywhere near it, realistically.
Yeah, no, I never would. Yeah, but look, it's slow enough to ignore.
Here okay,
you've got to let the man Chris do his nip on.
Yep,
nip on. Okay, so the changes that we've made. Only units may not take magic items. Combiner units may not take magic items. And the idea there, we didn't want to buff up a throwaway unit. Couple of notes on the Nippon army. The wording for the use of the shrine remains unchanged, even though the anvil has been altered for 2022. The logic there really is that we have identified a fairly significant exploit within the army in its current form, that when initially we conceived it, that we had the breakpoint built purely on samurai, i.e. infantry troops. Nobody thought somehow that you would take the minimum amount of samurai, hide them in a forest somewhere, and then let the rest of the army do the fighting. This has come up in some of the Swedish play groups, and you know, at the end of the day, I think the reason that we didn't spot this is that none of us are gamey enough to do that. You know, you wouldn't. I wouldn't.
I definitely would.
Barry, you would.
Barry would. Dennis would.
I'm sure Sherwin would.
You can't have the army signature unit hiding in a forest while everybody else does the work. It's just not how.
Janice did it with Bretonnian, didn't he?
Hang on.
The important thing is you can't do this with the Bretonnian list because you can't hide your cavalry.
You can't hide
in a forest. You can stick them on a hill.
Put them in the back corner.
Yeah,
That would be quite a Bretonnian thing to do. And you're waiting for the moment to do the decisive charge to finish the enemy off. But it's a bit of a problem. So bottom line, if you have a Nippon army, fixing up an experimental version of the list, which we'll put out on the experimental forum, and that will probably replace the developmental list next year. Jim and I have done quite a bit of work on looking at different permutations of calculating the breakpoint. We played a couple of games where we kept track of the Nippon break in several different ways, where we had the samurai units counting as two towards the break. That was too much a negative thing for the normal breakpoint calculation, but the samurai counted for double towards the army withdrawing. That was too much of a negative for the Nippon player, having the samurai counting for two units towards the value of the breakpoint and the attrition towards the breakpoint, too much of an advantage towards the other direction. So having played around with all the numbers, standard calculation of breakpoint, which actually means that some of the other units need to be rejigged, it's very likely that the number of Ronin that you'll be allowed to take will reduce, because they'll probably remain as throwaways. But otherwise, these... I just noticed a typo there. Otherwise, the Nippon list, we need to do a little bit of surgery to it. And it's sad, actually, because the idea of having a infantry-based list which has the Bretonnian-style breakpoint calculation, it doesn't seem to be viable because it's too easy to exploit. Yeah. So we'll just go back to the standard stuff.
Yeah,
but hopefully that will mean that the samurai will lead the army rather than standing and watching the battle, which is kind of the point.
Just make them, they're not allowed to go in woods.
Do you know what? I thought about that.
You're not allowed anyone defended.
There would be terrain restrictions. You could move through woods, but you couldn't finish your move in them. Jim felt that was too complicated and too situational. So, it's just we did consider that. But
I mean, what would happen if you got driven back into a wood? You'd have to be destroyed, wouldn't you?
You'd have to be destroyed. And what's destroying you? Yeah. Okay, cool. So we'll just quickly talk about this, and then I will need to go. So Norse Huskarls have changed to 110 points, what they always should have been.
Like, it took a while.
We got them from 90 to 100, and now they've finally gone from 90 to 110. Never mind, we got there eventually.
It was obvious what they should have been in the first place.
I mean, when I produced that work saying, look how much they stick out, it was so funny how anybody could see it anywhere else.
But the problem was that they were the signature army, a signature list entry in an army, and people said, they should be discounted because they're the signature unit or something.
Like,
no other units get this, the signature bonus or discount or whatever.
So oof when...
I mean, this is a big kick in the balls to Norse players because they've now lost 8 times 20 points. That's 160 points.
From original list, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, personal view on this, why are they allowed 8 of them? 4 per thousand. If you look at any of the historical list where you have Huscarls, Housecarls, and then Ferd, or whatever the sort of standard infantry are, so your sort of Saxon armies, your Norse armies, of historical things, the Huscarls is like 1 or 2 per thousand at the most.
Yeah.
So if you're playing Ancients, you've got one unit of Housecarls, your sort of chieftain's bodyguard, and the rest of it is your not so good troops. So why do the Norse players get so many of them?
I will have to drop out of the conversation because I need to go to university. But I will say with Skaven, like when you breeze past it, I just want to say I tried, everybody. I tried.
We didn't try very hard.
We'll talk about that.
I tried. Okay.
We'll talk about that another day, sir, if you want to bring it up.
Just say I tried.
Must but, try yeah. harder. So.
You tried. Right. You tried to make an already troublesome army worse, which I think is why.
Right. Okay, I'll see
I'm
you
not
later.
Sure the Dark Elf Blunder rule is what you need on the right. Have fun, Paul. Bye bye.
Seamless.
Right.
Right. So, but perfect. I think who suggested this? It was our Swedish friend, wasn't it?
Is this Nathan again? No, Martin. Sorry.
Martin, yeah. Martin. So, yeah. So, with the Ulfwerpner, which is the second half of the changes to Norse, they had some restrictions that didn't really make any sense going forward.
Yeah, I mean the Ulfwerpner are basically werewolves, shapeshifters, and they were an interesting unit. They were short edge infantry. I think they're one of only 2 short edge infantry units in the game. The other one being pikemen. They have a decent stat line, but you couldn't brigade them with anything else. So you had your 1 per thousand. So you'd end up with 2 units sitting out in their own. They couldn't really do anything, and they were too easy to pick off. But if you're able to put them in a brigade with something, then fantastic. And I don't see, I don't understand why they weren't able to be brigaded with other things. Maybe it was the same logic as troll slayers.
It is.
Which we have removed.
Yeah, they were troll slayers. Bizarrely, weren't allowed to brigade with themselves. They were allowed to brigade with other stuff. And these guys are the opposite. They weren't allowed to brigade with anything but themselves. But anyway, it's all about cleaning up and trying to get it consistent. I think it will be interesting. How do they get support then if they're short-based? Because if you've got a mixed brigade, it must be kind of like pikemen, where you've got pikemen mixed with crossbowmen. You get some support from the side.
I don't know. They get some support from the sides. Yeah. We'll have to see how that works.
As long as they're used more than they are now, which is not at all, because everybody just takes 8 Huscarls and a load of cavalry.
You take 8 Huscarls.
That's what I mean. I've never played them.
Other people take...
I've never seen a Norse army without 8 Huscarls. Never. Never, never, never. Never. But
maybe that's something we need to look at.
Well, yeah, we just have. I think it's good. They still will take 8 Huscarls. It just makes their army a bit smaller, unfortunately. Because Huscarls are very good for what they do. Right, so... tidying up there. Ogre Kingdoms. Not much here. The Lead Belchers, which this is one of the classic examples of the Lego brick principle, that Lead Belchers were templated on blunderbusses because they didn't have a template. There was just some absolutely crazy random amount of attacks where sometimes they'd hit themselves and all kinds of silliness. So we had to find a new profile for Lead Belchers. We moved them to mirror blunderbusses. And then when blunderbusses moved, these guys have to change. In future, this Lead Belcher Blunderbuss profile will just be considered our profile. And if we make changes, it will just affect both of them. Because it doesn't make any sense to have them separating away again for no reason. The interesting thing, as I said earlier, is that you can't swap bulls out for these. Maybe that's something we'll look at. At the end of the day, bulls are so good. I don't know why you wouldn't take them anyway. What are you going to take instead of bulls?
Well, I mean, if you had the possibility to upgrade or change, let's say, your bulls for Lead Belchers, you'd be trading off, I think, a point of armor save versus the 2 standing shoot attacks if your enemy charges you. And that's maybe not a bad trade-off, because the ogre army, they're slow. And very often you do end up getting charged. They can certainly take the charge, but a couple of hits on the way in, people may think that's a viable choice. It's worth testing it.
Oh, I mean, the biggest plus from this is, apart from, if you exclude Nobblers, the cheapest thing in the Ogre army used to be about 105 points, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so this had been, is it 80 or 90? I can't remember, but this is good quality for the Ogre list. It won't make Ogre Kingdoms like tier one or anything, but it gives them some more options and gets your lead belches onto the table.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, the ogres need a lot of help. Interestingly, if you look across there's three different versions of tier rankings. There's the one that you did in the last episode, Ian Standing's one on his YouTube channel. Chris Dingwell had come up with a list as well. And the ogres are close to the bottom of everybody's lists. Mm. And I think they need a lot of help to make them into a viable choice. Speaking as somebody who's, I take ogres just so I have an excuse for losing at tournaments.
the problem comes in the heavy expensive infantry monster bracket. So like the differentiation between Yetis and Gorgers and Iron Guts and stuff. It's like, why have they got so many of the things that just kind of look and do the same kind of thing?
I mean, the other thing with the lead belches, there are some lovely models out there which just aren't getting used for all these reasons. This is your cue to plug Black Get Miniatures.
I'm not interested.
The models are nice.
I thought so. but the times are a changing, as Bob Dylan said. The times they are a changing.
lead is old fashioned. Lead is still best. BlackGetMiniatures.com. Keep burying beer money.
Skaven. Right. So Paul anyway, did try a load of shit around Skaven. I'm sorry to be rude, but it didn't get through. I mean, some of the stuff he was coming up with was nonsense. He wanted to make them even worse. Yeah. How can you make them worse?
Answers on a postcard, please, or in the comments on the YouTube page or somewhere. Do you think that Paul wanted to give the Skaven army the Dark Elf blunder rule. This is the one where you have to kill your characters if they blunder, which I see where he's coming from. I agree, it's a very fluffy thing to do. But really, as a Skaven player, which again is anywhere near anybody's top 10 armies, do you really need to do that to them?
But also, there was no discounts anywhere. It was just, we're adding this negative trait to the army. Deal with it. It's like, what? Damn. No, sir, no. So, no changes for Skaven, no changes for Tomb Kings. Tomb Kings are a pretty consistent army. They don't really need a lot, I don't think.
No.
Sorry.
You know, it's interesting, actually, Barry, if you look at the six original armies, we've done very little tinkering with them. They are just, they're all, and you could probably play War Master quite happily with just those six armies.
Well, I think the French do, don't they?
No, they've added a few more things.
Well, there's not many more than six. They haven't got 25.
No, they have, I think they have 14.
Maybe.
14, something like that. But they have a lot of experimental stuff in their official book, I think, for Evolution is basically everything Games Workshop has released, but that's about it.
I mean, they did do a good job on those original lists. It tends to be the later lists that got a bit flabby and like idiosyncratic in the unit entries, let's say. So this is a good change in Witch Hunters. Warrior Priests get an extra attack to kind of.
Yeah, so the Warrior Priest is now a wizard. Is he a wizard?
Yeah, he's a wizard.
He is a wizard. So plus one attack. And command 7, 55 points. So basically, he was templated previously on the standard Empire Wizard who didn't have any attacks, but that didn't really fit with the fluff. So the Warrior Priest now gets an attack, which I think is quite fluffy.
Yeah, it's nice. Just like they come with a free sword or unicorn or whatever, because there are lots of ways to shoehorn attacks onto wizards and priests and stuff.
Well, it's an interesting footnote, actually, that the Witch Hunter, two of the Witch Hunter's spells can only be cast if he has joined a unit that's in combat. So this is a combat wizard, unlike so many other wizards in War Master. So that's, I think that's a good change.
Yeah, and it's not unprecedented. Certain, I think like Chaos Sorcerers, they've got an attack because they're like fighty sorcerers. So it's not unprecedented that wizards have attacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, what have we got? Wood Elves.
Oh, dear God. Now they took such a shellacking this year. Oh, lordy, lordy. Oh, lordy.
Well, okay, so let's read through the thing. So Treekin have increased, I think, in points to 110, which is fine.
Do you want the rationale behind that?
because they, well, I think if at 105 they were, if they were templated off ogres, which is what that I think they were, they were. Didn't have the they didn't have the compulsory charge, and we've corrected this in a few list,
and they're fearless. You know,
that,
as well.
They get that for free.
Yeah. And they don't have a negative. So basically, they should have been templated on Black Orcs. Now they're Black Orcs. So fine. Everyone's happy. 110 points. They get
You're never going to be happy with
the... Bit of a negative in that with the ordering. Bit of a positive in that they're fearless. Whatever. There you go. 110 points. Everyone's happy now.
Okay.
Bull Ogres, they're called. Because we're special Bull Ogres. Other Ogres do cost 110. But Bull Ogres are 105. For some reason, because we've got to charge Humies. So, bull. Okay, right. Cool. Next one. Removal of three additional woods. Now, we did this to Beastmen ages ago, and for some reason, Wood Elves escaped that. Because Beastmen had this same rule, where they somehow got three woods.
Yep. Well, it's just it's an anomaly in the army list, and we don't like anomalies, so therefore we've removed it. It is fluffy. It would have been fluffy for both the Wood Elves and the Beastmen, but it creates too many additional problems. So therefore, bye bye free woods.
I mean, they were quite big as well, because it did specify historically how big the wood could be, and it was a fair lump. You could fit a lot in it.
15 centimeters.
Yeah, was it 15 by 20 or something? Like that? I think no side bigger than 20. It was quite a big thing. You could have it. Obviously, you could have a rectangular wood because they grow in rectangles.
Yep.
To maximize.
And absolutely nobody would take two free woods, stick them together, put the whole army in it, and then cast tree singing on the wood to move the army forward. Nobody would do that, would they, Barry?
I don't play wood elves. But I've seen a lot of shenanigans with woods.
I believe you did. Play them at one point.
Totems.
I remember a podcast ages ago where you were moaning again about the Wood Elf list, and you'd taken two big square woods, stuck the whole army, much of the army as you could get, and just tree sung these woods forward.
Maybe it would have had to be done on tokens. I haven't painted a Wood Elf yet. So, but it didn't make any sense to have this rule running around. So
yeah,
it had to go. It had to go. If not now, then when? So. It's now.
Fair enough. Right. So the other change to the tree singing spell. The spell is now the same as the Mists of Albion spell that we talked about earlier. So tree singing, you now cast it on a 5+. It's got a range of 30. The wizard calls forth a mass of tangling thorn branches to surround their troops, protecting them from harm. This spell may be cast upon a single friendly infantry unit within range, regardless of whether the caster can see them or not. The spell lasts until the start of the caster's next turn or until the target unit moves in any way. The target infantry unit counts as defended even if it is in open terrain. So the rationale here is anything that can move terrain around is a problem in tabletop games. If you're playing, it's not so much of a problem with pitched battles, but if you're playing scenarios, big issue, because you could basically plonk the wood on top of the objective, and then it made it extremely difficult for your opponent to do anything about it. So it's the changing the tree singing to something. Honestly, I think this is probably more of a buff than a debuff to the Wood Elf army, because if you think about when you cast it after all the movement is done. So you know which troops are in combat. You can cast it onto troops in combat and they're defended. So actually this is good for the Wood Elf and the infantry heavy sort of Wood Elf lists. And I think it's pretty good. I think it's a good trade.
It's certainly not as powerful as the other one, because you could move your entire army potentially within a wood. So you're moving your army in defended status. But what this allows you to do is, if you've got an ogre leading the line or whatever they're called, treekin or whatever they're called, you can make them now defended in the open, which is pretty strong. This is an exact copy of
Mists of Albion.
Yeah, Mists of Albion. So even though it's called something different, because I mean, they're only names, aren't they? The actual spell is the same. And that again is going back to this building block thing, that why have two spells that are virtually the same? Why not just make them the same? So that's what's happened here.
No, I think this is a good change, and it'll stop people moaning, hopefully for a short time, about this army being overpowered because of the ability to move terrain around.
It's not gonna stop the guy that's saying they're underpowered moaning, is it? After three more debuffs. But whatever. It had to be done.
Not everybody thinks they're a top 10, top 5 army. Well, and I can see where Ian is coming from because he puts them fairly far down the table. And yeah, I mean, their opinions vary.
But
we have not seen Wood Elves storming the tournament scene at all, which is what everybody predicted, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago when that list came out, the current list came along. I don't know. We'll see.
Time will tell. Sure, yeah, we'll see. Sherwin's a good force of nature. He tests things to the limit. So I'll be expecting some. He's playing Cathy at the moment, isn't he? So very, very.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's big Cathy. Big break. So, and then one thing we did have to do is a couple of the changes we've made in 2022 overwrote things we'd agreed in 2021. That's just the nature. Nothing's perfect in life. Sometimes, I mean, a year is a long time in war games. Yes. So what looked like the right answer a year ago may not be the right answer today. And that's where we are. So a couple of things, like Chris said about the anvil, and there was another one running around.
So when this document comes out, you'll see that some things are in grey text. These are the previous changes that we've agreed. Change log, I think, to use your term, Barry. So basically almost all the things that we agreed on last year are now approved status. Things that are not, the clarification from last year on the instability table, clearly the new instability table has superseded that. And the other thing to do with the dwarf anvil, the change in the length of time it's effective, the points will go back up to the original 50 points. Okay. And we'll see how we go with that. I think those are the only ones that
There was something in the Nippon then struck through, but I don't know why that was struck through. Sorry, Chris.
The Nippon, where was that? That was removing the... Okay. That's a change to the Ronin special order or special rules. So that's not something that superseded. That's something that was deleted last year.
Okay, so maybe if you just had like a date that
I'll add some dates onto that and tidy it up before we put it out.
Good. The other thing to say is that there is a thing running around just before we tidy up here with Alice. She's doing a couple of copies of the army list. What is the stable version, if you like, which is 2021 with the confirmation votes, and one is like a beta version, which is the 2022 army list. Mm-hmm. Now, the anvil and what was the other one? The anvil and the demon table. They are still in the 2021 confirmed stable version because that's what the vote said to do. And the 2022 beta version will have the new stuff in. If people want to use the stable version, cool, but it really would be very helpful if people use the 2022 beta version because that's where these changes are, the ones that need testing.
And of course, the format for that, please, if you are participating in all of this sort of crowdsourced playtesting, please do let us know what you think about things. The experimental forum is definitely the place to do that. And if you want to make suggestions for other things that you've tested out for us to have a look at, then please, put them up there. And we'll, so that the sort of the mechanism kind of grinds on this year. We're coming towards the end, we hope, of the pandemic, which will make it a bit easier for everybody to get out and actually play games face to face. So hopefully we'll have a much more active year of play testing and some interesting things to decide upon this time next year.
Yeah, I agree.
I think probably we should thank all the people on the rules committee. The names are on the screen. It's too many people to read out, but the people who donate their time. People do this on an entirely voluntary basis. Many people are very active, and I know a lot of thought and effort goes into what people post. We don't always agree on things, but we're kind of all coming from a good place of keeping the game that we all really love alive and well and functioning well without introducing changes that will unbalance it. So thank you to everybody who's contributed over the last 12 months. And also especially thank you as well to the people who've contributed to the experimental forum. That's become a very good vehicle for people to kick ideas around, and and some of the ideas that are coming out now are really, really interesting. Some lists that really have some problems with them, people are stepping up and proposing some good solutions for thorny problems. So it's all good.
Yeah, I just want to, as Chris said, recommend you go to the experimental forum. I know forum is a bit old school, but it really is the best way to keep information actually findable, because Facebook isn't great for that kind of stuff at all. So and just some other thank yous. Thank you to Alish for his tireless work in keeping this shit together and somehow finding space in the book to squeeze more stuff in. To Chris for putting this document together, this change log. This is vital piece of work. Thank you, Chris. And a final one to, I'm going to say his name wrong, Piotri, our Polish brother who's leaving.
Okay.
So he's announced he's leaving. So thanks for your work last few years. It's Pietri, Petro, Petro. Sorry if I butchered your name, sir, but thank you for your efforts. Thank you for your efforts. And we will have a new person at least going forward. There is somebody already been nominated, and there'll be a process, and we'll get somebody on board to keep it at 21, which is a good number. And there was a lot of participation. There was a lot of good discussion. Most of it was very friendly, collegial. There were a couple of kind of bits of tension, but that's good. Creative tension's fine. But long may it continue. Long may it continue.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, like I say, it's always coming from a good place. So that's great.
Okay, right. Chris, I better let you get on with your day, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, whatever you're doing. Thank you for having me back, and see you soon, hopefully.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot. That was the end of this week's podcast. Right. Cheers, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to know more?